Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for up to half the cost. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Savings based on cost of Consumer Cellular single line 1, 5, and 10 gig data plans with unlimited talk and text compared to lowest cost single line postpaid unlimited talk, text, and data plans offered by T-Mobile and Verizon January 2024.
Pure Talk, the cell phone service my family relies on, is now providing international roaming to over 50 countries. As you plan your summer travel, make sure your wireless company covers you at home and abroad. Unlimited talk, text, plenty of 5G data for just $20 a month. That's less than half the price of Verizon, AT&T, or T-Mobile. Go to puretalk.com/clay and make the switch today. That's puretalk.com/clay, and you'll save an additional 50% off your first month. Switch to Pure Talk so you can have more money to travel with this summer.
Hey, it's Will Friedle.
And Sabrina Bryan.
And we're the hosts of the new podcast, Magical Rewind.
You may know us from some of your favorite childhood TV movies, like My Date with the President's Daughter.
And the Cheetah Girls movies.
Together, we're sitting down to watch all the movies you grew up with and chat with some of your favorite stars and crew that made these iconic movies happen.
So kick back, grab your popcorn, and join us. Listen to Magical Rewind on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Brought to you by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
This is 24, a weekly highlight reel from the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show, featuring all things election coverage. Let's get started. Here are Clay and Buck.
Trump remains on trial in New York City. Lots of construction workers, big Trump fans, a lot of positivity there. But I want to play for you the big story here. And I went and read the New York Times coverage just to confirm that, yeah, the hearing went about like Buck and I told you that it did. Because if even the Supreme Court headline on the New York Times is conservative majority seems ready to limit election case against Trump, such a ruling would probably send it back to a lower court and delay any trial until after the November election. So if the New York Times is telling you a couple of hours later what Buck and I told you at the top of the show was likely to be the case, I'm even more convinced that our analysis of this is on point, because this is not what the New York Times wants to write. This is not what the New York Times wants to report. And Buck, I pulled one line that I thought was interesting from the New York Times article here, and I do think it's significant. We're writing a rule for the ages, Justice Gorsuch said. A lot of focus on Trump, deservedly so, but whatever precedent is put in place here, the principle of that precedent will apply for years and years to come. And we've got some audio that I think goes a long way towards establishing exactly what I am talking about. From Justice Gorsuch himself, I want to start, this is earlier today, what exact presidential immunity might Trump have as it pertains to the charges brought by Jack Smith? How do you draw that line? Where should the line be? Gorsuch talks about the history here and says, I want to think about how this will apply going forward. Listen to Cut 24.
Same thing in Nixon. We said, gosh, in Nixon versus Fitzgerald, that's something courts shouldn't get engaged in because presidents have all manner of motives. And again, I'm not concerned about this case, but I am concerned about future uses of the criminal law to target political opponents based on accusations about their motives, mm-hmm. whether it's re-election or who knows what corrupt means in 1512, right? We don't know what that means. Maybe we'll find out sometime soon. But the dangerousness of accusing your political opponent of having bad motives, mm-hmm. and if that's enough to overcome your core powers or any other limits.
Fabulously well said, Buck. I mean, that's Gorsuch. I've got a couple more I want to play. But this goes to, we're not just deciding Trump. We're deciding what the precedent should be for presidents that will serve, hopefully, long into the future after anyone listening to this right now is gone.
Who's your favorite justice on the court right now?
It's a great question.
For me, it's Alito or Thomas, but occasionally Gorsuch gets me kind of excited. But Alito or Thomas.
I think it's Gorsuch because my and this is me talking as a lawyer, and maybe it's a little bit of a romantic thought, but what I like about Supreme Court cases is not deciding challenging issues of today. It's when they're so incredibly well-crafted that 200 years from now, you could read them and you could say, this principle still applies as a clarion call for liberty along into the future. And I think a lot of justices get captured by the emotional winds of the moment. For instance, when we had Sotomayor asking questions about the mandate on the COVID shot, and she couldn't even get the facts right. Remember, she said there's like 100,000 kids currently hospitalized with COVID, and they were so wrong.
She was probably wearing two masks during the oral argument, so that tells you.
Well, I mean, and I think that factors in here. It takes a particular type of intellect to be contemplating not only what you're deciding today, but how that principle will apply years into the future. And that, to me, is what the job of a Supreme Court should be. And that ties in with this cut here, Alito, who you just cited.
Well, one sec before we get to Alito. I just to follow up on the Gorsuch point, there's a difference between what you want and what is just, right? What you want is an emotion. It's at any moment in time. And that has to do with outcome. To your point about not just this, but future cases, it has to be able to stand so that there is an understanding of where the guidelines, where the rules, the guardrails are for a future president. Because if presidential conduct that is clearly presidential conduct that, you know, does not involve some external breaking of law can be criminalized based on corrupt desire within the conduct, then you could have somebody prosecuted for any act as president that you don't like as soon as, you know, you decide to do so. Right. I mean, that this is the real challenge. If you're just going to read the mind of a president, you know, oh, well, he didn't pardon that person because he thought that, you know, he should. Now, pardons are interesting, aren't they? Because pardons are because it gets a little bit of a, you know, what is the quid pro quo? But you have to look at whether or not it's presidential conduct, whether it goes to what the president's duties are supposed to be. I think that Gorsuch understands that this is, because it's the first time they're looking at it, because of the implications, they have to get this right, which is why I think they'll take a very narrow and minimal action on it. Now you have Alito, my favorite, probably.
Yes.
Maybe Thomas.
Cut 23 here. This is important. For those of you who are not students of history, one of the, I think, most indefensible decisions of the World War II era, everybody wants to debate now, should we have dropped the bomb? That's turned into a big discussion. My answer is yes, it was the right decision to drop the bomb on Japan at Hiroshima and Nagasaki. But we had containment camps in the United States for Japanese Americans. And it took years for the court to come out and say, actually, sorry, we shouldn't have done that. I believe, this is the lawyer, it's been a while since I passed the bar, Korematsu is the case that said this was wrong. And Alito says, okay, let's look at the scope of history. Could FDR have been prosecuted for putting Japanese Americans in concentration camps? Listen to cut 23.
Mr. Sauer and others have identified events in the past where presidents have engaged in conduct that might have been charged as a federal crime. And you say, well, no, that's not really true. This is page 42 of your brief. So what about President Franklin D. Roosevelt's decision to intern Japanese Americans during World War II? Couldn't that have been charged under 18 U.S.C. 241, conspiracy against civil rights?
Today, yes, given this court's decision in Trump versus United States, in which, you know, Trump versus Hawaii, excuse me, where the court said Korematsu is overruled. I mean, President Roosevelt made that decision with the advice of his attorney general.
I mean, the point is a really good one. FDR obviously died in Powder Springs, Georgia, correct me if I'm wrong, crew, in 1944, right after basically his reelection. I think
that's
I'm
a pretty
correct.
Good memory pull there. Powder Springs, Georgia, look at you.
I'm making sure that I'm right, but so he couldn't have been prosecuted because he died. But let's pretend that in another world, FDR lives until 1964. What if a prosecutor had decided after he left the presidency, as we now recognize Korematsu was the poor decision. Another good example I read in the Wall Street Journal this morning. A lot of people forget Abraham Lincoln did away with the writ of habeas corpus during the Civil War. He defied his Supreme Court and he said, I can put anybody in prison for any reason under my war powers while the Civil War is going on. That
it's actually illegal. You know, I think it's actually illegal. I mean, you know, as much as we all like Lincoln,
that's the point here is that even though it's an illegal act, and we later find out the Supreme Court says that FDR shouldn't have been able to do the concentration camps. Where do you draw the line? Now, they tried to say, well, his attorney general said this was all right.
I think internment camps, not concentration camps, I think, generally, right? Although I know it's a similar, just to differentiate,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, well, they weren't killing. It's a good question. What is the difference between a concentration camp and an internment camp? But regardless, they weren't trying to put the Japanese Americans to death. They were just trying to restrict them from aiding Japan during World War II. And also, there were restrictions given to different, a German population was so much larger, it was not conceivable to have done that. But there were a lot of investigations into German-American groups to see whether they were loyal to Germany or the United States. The reason why I bring this all up is, where do you draw the line? Now, she tried to say the attorney general told FDR he could do it. So, well, that's an interesting argument then, too, because then the argument is, well, if the conspiracy is big enough, then you're telling me that there is no criminal culpability. So if the attorney general agrees that the president's misbehaving, well, what about the president found advisors to give him advice that he wanted to hear? Because you can, you know, Buck, you briefed the president. When you're the president of the United States, if you ask enough people if you can do something, sooner or later, somebody will say, well, yeah, you can do it, sir.
It's even worse than that, because in the government bureaucracy, and I can tell you from the CIA, the DNI office, you name it, DIA, NSA, NGA, we'll name all the different agencies. You figure out a lot of times, this is what people do, what the president wants to hear, and that's what you tell them, because you're the one that gets invited back, you're the one that has access, and you're the one that gets promoted.
Yes, men get promoted.
Goes.
Yes, men get promoted. This is why positions of power is difficult to make good decisions, because eventually you get so powerful that everybody tells you you're a genius and this is how the emperor has no clothes. He's walking around. Everybody lies to him. Okay. My point on this is, if you really study history, Trump will not be the last president that the opposing political party will try to put in prison. And this is why I'll give us, ring the bell here, a little bit of praise. You and I, from the moment they raided Mar-a-Lago in August of 2022, and Alan Dershowitz, there's very few people who actually are staying committed to principle, said this is an awful precedent. Because once you set a new principle, once you set a new precedent, others will follow it. So as soon as the FBI showed up and raided Mar-a-Lago, and as soon as these charges started, my belief is the only way to really snuff this idea in the bud, one is the Supreme Court. I should say there's a couple. Supreme Court has been decent on this so far. The other one is there need to be political consequences. Trump needs to kick Joe Biden's ass to such an extent that people out there say, oh, wow, this wouldn't have happened but for Biden trying to put Trump in prison for the rest of his life. And I hope that's going to be the lesson in 6 months.
It is very hard to see at least what is trending right now in all of the polls, and not think that at this point, a majority of the American people are rejecting. You look.
Unhappy. I just got a text. I want to apologize to America. I thought it was. Are we sure it's not Powder Springs too? It's Warm Springs, and it was 1945. Not Powder
Springs.
Someone
take away his history nerd card for the rest of the week.
This is a
not
shot
Powder
across
Springs,
the bow.
Warm
here.
Springs. How dare you, sir?
I think that Powder Springs and Warm Springs are the same thing. It's like Antietam and the Sharpsburg.
The place next to it.
Well, it's like one. It's a river, and you know how that's how they name Civil War battlefields. The North went with the river closest or the stream closest, and the South went with the city. So you get like Manassas versus Bull Run, and you get Sharpsburg versus Antietam. Sometimes they agreed because there wasn't water really close. It's just Gettysburg. I'm going to go to the instant replay here, but I apologize. I did get the year wrong for sure.
Hey, everyone. It's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
Grand Canyon University, a private Christian university in beautiful Phoenix, Arizona, believes that we're endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. GCU believes in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose.
GCU equips you to serve others in ways that promote human flourishing and create a ripple effect of transformation for generations to come. By honoring your career calling, you impact your family, your friends, and your community.
Change the world for good by putting others before yourself to glorify God. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's online, on-campus, and hybrid learning environments are designed to help you achieve your unique academic, personal, and professional goals.
With over 330 academic programs as of September 2023, GCU meets you where you are and provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Let it flourish. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University, private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/news. That's LifeLock.com/news to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
You're listening to 24, the year of impact, with Clay and Buck.
Our guest, you all know her, Julie Kelly, with us now. Check out Declassified. You can subscribe to that on Substack. That is Julie's publication there. It is excellent. I read it. Clay reads it. Julie, thanks for being here with us. I wanted to just jump into this. A lot of legal action going on today. Big Supreme Court case heard, going right to the heart of presidential immunity, the J6 case against Trump. Here is the headline from the New York Times. Wanted to have your reaction to it after hearing oral arguments this morning. Conservative majority seems ready to limit election case against Trump. Julie, I feel like I'm surprised that I'm going to have to say this, but from the New York Times lips to Trump's ear, I mean, to God's ears. What do you think?
Well, I think that they are probably right. And here's why. Because the big debate centered around official acts as president versus personal or even private acts. And there was a lot of discussion back and forth as to what represents an official act, what doesn't. And of course, that creates a whole slippery slope, which several of the justices, at least Kavanaugh, Gorsuch, Alito, had indicated serious concerns about. You know, who then becomes the referee as to what's official or a core function versus political, personal, private? And so going back to the indictment, and I really need to underscore this claim, Buck. We're talking about four counts, okay? They talked a lot about murder. They talked about bribery, about initiating a coup, killing people. That is not what this indictment is about. It's really important for people to be reminded. We're talking about four of the most vague statutes on the books, two of which we talked about last week in the Supreme Court address, 1512C2, obstruction of an official proceeding, extremely vague, and then two very vague conspiracy statutes. So these are not clear-cut laws, crimes, murder, bribery, drug trafficking, the things that we would expect a president to face criminal prosecution for. So in the indictment, there are certainly elements that are completely within the president's purview, such as replacing an acting attorney general with somebody else, which is what he considered replacing Jeffrey Rosen with Jeffrey Clark. There are other things that fall under official acts. Things get a little murkier. Even John Sauer, who is representing Donald Trump, admitted that, okay, using private attorneys, calling up political parties or officials, you know, to conceive or encourage them to come up with alternative slates of electors that might fall under personal / political. So I think that that's what the New York Times and others are hinting at, is that the indictment itself could have to be narrowed down, determining whether it's Jack Smith or this gets kicked back to Judge Tommy Chutkin, who was the one who originated the order denying immunity. And then she has to figure out official versus personal, hold some sort of evidentiary hearing to determine what falls under official, what falls under personal or private.
My biggest takeaway for the particulars of the timing here, Julie, is that there's virtually no chance now that any case other than the case that is currently proceeding in New York City is going to be decided before November 5th. That is a jury ruling. Based on the arguments today, and there are a lot more issues at scope than just Trump, and we'll maybe get to that with you in a sec, but would you agree with me that it's Alvin Bragg and then it's to the voters in terms of lawfare and what's going to be complete?
I do. I mean, we still obviously have the Southern Florida case prodding along, and there is a slim possibility that could go to trial before the election. But look, Clay, to your question, if the Supreme Court kicks this back to the district court, to Judge Chutkin, and says you need to hold these hearings to figure out what falls where, they also will have some choice words for the circuit court. I don't know if you guys caught that. Chief Justice John Roberts, not pleased with that three-judge panel's decision, calling it tautological, basically circular reasoning that they used to uphold Judge Chutkin's ruling. So if they kick that back, Clay, let's say they do wait until the end of June or even the end of May.
Sorry to cut you off, by the way. I wouldn't be stunned if they put this a ruling come out on July 3rd, the day before the July 4th holiday, just to kind of bury it into that. Sorry to cut you off. I was looking at the calendar. That's kind of, it's the last case they're basically hearing. That could be a possibility if they wanted to hold it as long as possible.
True. That the end of their term is June, but to your point, Clay, they can issue orders, I believe, after that. So let's say that they do. Kicks back to Chutkin, you know, after 4th of July week is over, and she immediately orders, we're going to hold an evidentiary hearing 2-3 weeks after that. You have to file your motions, responses, et cetera. They really start to run out of time. But I'm going to posit something even more terrifying than what we've talked about is going to trial in J6 before the election, is putting Donald Trump on trial after the election. Just imagine for a moment that they have the evidentiary hearings. Chutkin decides, okay, this part of the indictment, these acts are official, these aren't. It gets, you know, runs the gamut. And then they toss it back. Okay, this is settled. He can go on trial for private personal acts, and here are the ones that we determined. Then can you go to trial the end of November, December, early January, even if Trump wins, especially if he wins? That's another nightmare scenario that could be created by.
But he would be able to pardon himself then in that case if he won, even if he potentially got convicted. But you're right. I mean, this is honestly, I don't know why we still do this. I don't know why we have such a long period. What you're hitting at, Julie, November 5th until January, I'm not sure, 20th or whatever the date is when the officials, 20th. Yeah. I mean, that's a long time for a defeated president to remain in office. Historically, it used to not be till March, but that was because you had to travel long distances.
It's also time, you know, they have a transition that they're trying to prepare for. And, you know, I think it's meant to ease the situation. And they didn't prepare for four, now going on really five, criminal indictments against one of the candidates to be a part of the
But I mean, I think it, that like kind of abeyance area there is kind of a mess, as Julie's pointing out.
Can I ask you about, you know, this is another one of these things. It's kind of buried today. It's a big deal on any other day, but the Supreme Court arguments about whether the president could order a coup and effectively undo the constitutional order or not, et cetera, are pretty interesting. But 11 of the electors have been indicted in Arizona. The Arizona AG put out a video today, Chris Mays. What do you make of this? Like, they didn't indict Trump, they indicted Mark Meadows. And, you know, it seems to be somewhat in parallel to or somewhat similar to the Georgia case, at least in terms of some of the conduct. What do you make of all this?
I mean, look, I tweeted this last night, and I hate to say it. You have to envy how Democrats understand how to coordinate, conspire, and leverage their political power. Here's a guy who probably really didn't, or a woman who really probably didn't even really win the Arizona Attorney General's race. But it doesn't matter, because as soon as they take office, they leverage and weaponize their power against their political foes. I haven't had a time to go through the whole indictment, just getting ready for today. But, you know, this is Georgia, this is Michigan, this is all to bolster the idea. But even though Trump is unindicted co-conspirator, it is to bolster what's happening here in this J6 federal case. And it's also a signal, and we heard a little bit about this today. Amy Coney Barrett really is disappointing. But to continue to raise the idea that asking for or having others create alternative electoral certificates is a crime, which it hasn't. The National Archivist told Congress, we get fake electoral or manufactured, made up alternative electoral certificates every presidential election. This is not new. So to criminalize it is also to warn people, if you protest in any way, the 2024 election, whatever happens, whatever stunts you want to pull, whatever you want to do to demonstrate against, let's say Joe Biden gets reelected, we are going to use our lawfare against you. And there's nothing to stop them. So this is really to, I think, add more optics, bolster the political and public view that there's something really criminal about concocting or pretending that you're, you know, sending in an alternative electoral certificate. Just ridiculous, but so, again, such a dangerous descent where we are headed, using this lawfare, not just federally, but state power, too.
Julie, last question for you. You mentioned South Florida. You've been covering that case. Judge Eileen Cannon has allowed a large amount of previously censored materials to be allowed to be displayed publicly. What should we know that is significant about what that has uncovered?
We should know, and I want to give kudos again to Judge Cannon. I know we've talked a lot about her, but it reveals, and this is why Jack Smith wanted all of this concealed. It reveals Joe Biden's White House, including some of his top attorneys and his general counsel's office, working collaboratively with the DOJ and archives to manufacture a records/documents case against Donald Trump. This completely flies in the face of what Jack Smith has alleged in his indictment there, but also what we've been told, that Joe Biden and his White House is completely hands off from this prosecution. So they were deeply involved, same players, DOJ, FBI, the archives, the intelligence community. This is like getting the Russiagate, FISAgate band back together. So kudos to her. There's going to be more unsealings today. I will be posting later, Julie_Kelly2, which is the grand jury transcript of the of Joaquin Nauta, Trump's close personal aide, also who has been charged in that case as well.
Julie, the grand jury, we should mention, by the way, Buck, that took place in Washington, D.C., before they then flipped the proceeding all the way down to South Florida. So yes, that Judge Cannon wasn't in charge of this.
Julie Kelly Substack. You can all subscribe. Julie, real quick, before I let you go, I know Clay said last question, but I'm throwing a last question because I'm really curious.
That's all right.
What do you think the biggest legal risk for Trump is now of all of the cases and scenarios?
I mean, right now, I have to think what's happening in New York, unfortunately.
I thought you might say that because Clay and I were just talking about that. This actually, I think what we see happening puts more pressure on them to get even crazier in New York City, where they just have full control and there's really no oversight. Go check out Julie's Substack, everybody, Declassified. Julie, always appreciate you being with us.
Thanks, guys. Have a good day.
You know that I like to look, and Julie's phenomenal. I'd encourage all of you to go follow everything that Julie Kelly's been saying. She has been, in terms of analysis and trying to look in the direction that we are going, better than almost anybody out there. Everybody was ridiculing the idea that the Supreme Court was going to take up this obstruction case as to whether or not it could be applied from a business perspective, passed for Sarbanes-Oxley, being used on Jan 6 cases. She was right. They're going to strike it down. I think she's right that there is only going to be now one case completed before we get to November, which makes me wonder, Buck. And I do think that everybody needs to prepare for this. As the realization starts to set in that all of this legal wrangling, they thought we're going to have Donald Trump in court March, April, May, June, July, August, September, October, November, all the way up to Election Day. We're going to hit him with federal charges. There's going to be major convictions. And Joe Biden's going to ride into the sunset and win. Now, they're probably not going to get Trump in court at all, I don't think, in terms of daily. Until, I mean, let's say this case ends, Buck, mid-June, something like that. May end up sooner than that. They may or may not get a conviction. But I think what you're going to see as a result is, and we've been hinting at this, but I think you need to prepare for it, they're going to dial up the crazy in terms of the punishment that they're going to try to get on Trump as they become aware, uh-oh, this is the only bite at the apple we're going to get.
They would be doing so much. I agree with that assessment. You and I talked about it. You brought it up. I agree. Julie comes on. She says it without knowing that we had just agreed on this one, which makes me feel like this is what the trend certainly is right now, or this is where the momentum is. New York, which was the first one to go, the easiest for them to bring in terms of they were basically guaranteed full control over the process because of the jurisdiction and because of the far left progressive prosecutor, Alvin Bragg, who is calling the shots there. But the damage that they will do to any faith that we could have in our legal system, if they're able to use New York as this weapon, the charges in New York are a joke. An unfunny joke, but they're preposterous. I wouldn't put anyone in prison nor convict anyone, any human being. If Alvin Bragg himself were sitting there charged with doing what Trump is doing and I were on that jury, I would not convict him.
I agree.
It's wrong. It's wrong what they are doing. The charges are wrong. The stacking them the way they've done it is wrong. The delaying it so that it comes in the election year is wrong. Clay, top to bottom, inexcusable. And now it's looking more and more like that's their great hope to defeat Donald Trump. That's how they're going to get four more years for Joe Biden. The business records charge in New York.
You're listening to 24, the most important year in politics, with Clay Travis and Buck Sexton.
Kash Patel is joining us, former DOD chief of staff, former federal prosecutor and public defender. He has selected 60 juries for trial service. Kash, been a bit, my friend. How you doing?
Hey, it's great to be with you guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man, absolutely. So let's start the two big news items today. A lot of campus anti-Israel stuff, but also the Trump trial that is going on, which is in some ways it's still hard to believe, even though it's happening. This is where we are as a country. This is what's happening. This is what's underway. What's your sense of it? And I'd start with this. Do you feel like there's any chance this that anyone on this jury might be fairly disposed toward the truth of this case and Donald Trump in general?
Look, there's always a chance, but there's a reason I live in Las Vegas and don't gamble as often as I used to. And people who are gambling on this trial will probably lose. The reality is what is happening, the tragedy is the destruction of due process. And for some reason, these prosecutors and judges have teamed up to think that the system of due process under the Constitution no longer applies to Donald Trump, or that they can selectively apply it to him in pieces. And what I mean by that is just look at the opening statement today. The lead prosecutor, who used to be the number three prosecutor at the Department of Justice, he gave the opening statement, this guy Colangelo. And he said, he told the jury, Donald Trump is here because of a criminal conspiracy related to election fraud. Now, the Constitution forbids specifically any mention of crimes not charged in the indictment to be presented to the jury. But this judge, of course, lapped it up and allowed it. There is no charge of conspiracy anywhere in the indictment, and all they continue to do is shred the due process rights of Donald Trump and that of the Constitution in the process and weaken our system of justice.
I think that's a really important point you just made. Who exactly is involved in this trial? The Biden administration, Joe Biden himself, many of their allies in the media, they regularly, I was reading the Times this morning, laying out, and Sunday, laying out all their analysis and reading all their articles, saying, oh, there is no grand conspiracy against Donald Trump. This is just happens to be Alvin Bragg. It just happens to be Fannie Willis. Jack Smith is totally independent. Merrick Garland's not involved in these cases. What did you just say? I think this is so important. The former number three position at the Department of Justice is now prosecuting a state court case. Now, you have a little bit of a background in this. In general, wouldn't this be akin to being a major leaguer and going back to A-ball? In other words, you would want to be as high as you could be in the Department of Justice. Number three overall in the DOJ is a big friggin' deal when it comes to trial prosecution. A state court in Manhattan, is that not a crazy, a decent analogy in a sports perspective? It'd be like if you made the major leagues deciding to go back to single A or double A ball to prosecute a state city court crime like this.
Yeah, as a sports man, I love the analogy. And look, you're absolutely right. What it shows is the two-tier system of justice. And just to highlight the importance of this, the number three, there's the attorney general, the deputy attorney general, and then this guy who used to sit at the head of the civil rights division as the PDAG. And now he has left that job, gone on to join Bragg's team, and not just quietly join the team. He delivered the opening statement. And this guy who's been a career prosecutor who knows you cannot tell a jury about any uncharged crimes opened with just that. And that shows you the level of connectivity between the DOJ, the Biden administration, and Bragg's office. And so when people say, oh, no, there's no conspiracy here, well, there's no such thing as coincidences in the United States government, certainly not at Joe Biden and Merrick Garland's DOJ. And now we're seeing it front and center, and this judge is allowing it all to happen.
Speaking of Kash Patel, formerly of Trump's DOD, he was chief of staff at the Pentagon. Kash, and also former federal prosecutor, Kash, if they find Trump guilty, and we know that's an if, who knows where the jury's going to go with this, what do you think will happen and how quickly do you see it happening?
Well, what's supposed to happen, especially in a case like this, is that there would be an appellate process and the defendant would remain out of custody because this is a nonviolent crime and you're talking about an individual who has literally zero criminal history. And we're talking about an instance where there are no victims of violent crimes. But what will happen here is this judge will probably take matters into his own hands, continue to create a new system of justice, and try to probably imprison Donald Trump and deny him his appellate rights that the Constitution allows. So it's going to be a very, very unfortunate series of events if Donald Trump is convicted, because it would be unlawful and unconstitutional. But then what this judge could do to him is completely remove him from the campaign trail, which that is his clear impetus. If you've ever watched even just one day of this trial, this judge has made up his mind like Judge Engoron did in the civil case that just happened before this one. These guys have convicted Trump in the court of public opinion and are going to convict him in their own courtrooms. They're just waiting for the process to play out.
Cash, how do you break down the other cases? You've been involved in the criminal court system before. As crazy as this New York City case is, Thursday we have the presidential immunity case that's being argued, the oral arguments in front of the Supreme Court. Presumably sometime in June we'll get that decision, as well as the Fisher case having to do with whether or not you can prosecute for effectively impeding official proceedings, as has been occurring with many of the January 6th related charges. How's the timeline work to you for this? Do you think that the New York City case is the only one that would go all the way through and get a jury verdict? Or do you think there will be a possibility of another case as well between now and November 5th?
Well, again, if we were on the normal timeline of justice, these cases would not even be charged this year. They would be charged later. And the timeline for average prosecution is 2 to 4 years. But they took the HOV lane because it's Donald Trump. Now, we'll see what the Supreme Court decides, but it's unequivocally, in my opinion, executive privilege for the president to have acted in the way he did, and that should apply here. It's also another indication that Joe Biden, who personally had to dissolve executive privilege for the DOJ to bring that prosecution in D.C. and Florida, he had to personally get involved. So when he says, "I'm not involved," that's another charade. But once the Supreme Court decides on that case and also the obstruction case, which is a very important point you bring up, the Supreme Court, I believe, is going to deny the use of this obstruction statute, which is from the Enron financial crimes fiasco. And they're going to throw out 300 plus convictions related to January 6th. And that should upend the entire timeline of any of the trials forthcoming. But we don't know what these district court judges who are going to do, like Chutkan, who have already basically stated that Donald Trump is a threat to democracy and they want him removed from the electoral process.
Speaking to Cash Patel, former federal prosecutor, Cash, Trump is facing all this stuff. How is he able to hold up under all of it, you know, with multiple criminal prosecutions? I mean, I know you and the president are in contact, and he knows you well, and you may well be a senior figure in his next administration, not to get too far ahead of things, but that's very possible here. How is he able to do this? Run for president with four absolutely insane felony criminal indictments, two federal and two state against him right now.
Yeah, you know, I was just with the president the other week, and it's a conversation. Many of my conversations I don't reveal, but this one I'm happy to. I asked him, "Mr. President, how do you deal with this exact question? You know, you're being falsely prosecuted. They're taking away your money. They're coming after your family. They're defaming you constantly." And his answer is really simple. He goes, "Cash, the future of this country is at stake, and he will not let it fail on his watch." And I think that drives him every single day, that he wakes up and he says, when the other side says, "Oh, Donald Trump's just in it for the money and fame," well, the reality shows it's the opposite. He's fighting for everybody else's right to have fame, to have money, to have the right to be an American citizen. And that energizes him more than anything I've ever seen. And I don't think you're going to see Donald Trump slow down. Every time they throw an arrow at this guy, he ingests it and he becomes the juggernaut of justice and rolls down the street, whether it's in New York, D.C., Florida, or elsewhere, and convinces more and more Americans that this two-tier system of justice has been weaponized for political purposes. And he's asking Americans not only to recognize that, but to go to the polls in November and elect him so we can fix our constitutional republic.
Last question for you, and I think you kind of hinted at this at the beginning. This is obviously a rigged jury, that 87% of people voted against Donald Trump in this jurisdiction. Based on analyzing the 12 jurors, the six alternates, everything else, what do you think the chances are, first of all, of a not guilty verdict? Buck and I both put that at zero. Do you think there is, and I'm curious if you would agree with that, do you think there is potentially a juror on this trial that might be willing to refuse to vote to convict and essentially give what would be a win, I think, through a hung jury? Based on what you've seen, based on your analysis of this case, how would you assess that probability?
Yeah, look, going back to my public defender days and my federal public defender days where I defended scores of criminals, in front of scores of different juries in different courtrooms, we always used to say the following. You just need one. You don't need all 12. You just need one. And that's what you guys were talking about to get to a hung jury. Now, I think the chances that one of those 12 jurors agrees with Donald Trump's presentation of the evidence is strong. But the chance that that same juror withstands the scrutiny that is going to come at his way from the media and the rest of the jury and the world, because this is the most important criminal prosecution in literally U.S. history, if not the world, that may fold that juror. That may succumb him to the pressures of the outside. But if the jurors actually stuck to the facts and the law, there's no way any of the 12 would convict Donald Trump, because there is no crime here. It's not a hush money case. It has to do with ledgers and payments made to a lawyer, all of which is above board. But I think Donald Trump's attorneys are looking for that one attorney, and there's a chance that they find him.
Cash Patel, everybody. Cash, appreciate you being with us, man. Thanks so much.
Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
Grand Canyon University, a private Christian university in beautiful Phoenix, Arizona, believes that we're endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. GCU believes in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose.
GCU equips you to serve others in ways that promote human flourishing and create a ripple effect of transformation for generations to come. By honoring your career calling, you impact your family, your friends, and your community.
Change the world for good by putting others before yourself to glorify God. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's online, on-campus, and hybrid learning environments are designed to help you achieve your unique academic, personal, and professional goals.
With over 330 academic programs as of September 2023, GCU meets you where you are and provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Let it flourish. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University, private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Hey, it's Danielle, Will, and Ryder from Pod Meets World. Thanks to our friends at Hyundai, we were able to record a very special episode for you guys at the one and only, wait for it,
Boy Meets World House.
Take a listen.
We are lucky to be sitting with Alan and Amy Matthews in the flesh, William, Rusty Russ, and Betsy Randall.
Yay!
Thank you. Thank you.
When those legends get here, let me know.
You're here. You're here already.
We didn't either when we were watching this.
That's the thing. That's
we didn't
the problem.
Realize it until we started getting into seasons 3 and 4. And now we're like, oh my God.
You were both so good on the show, and we missed it because we were young.
We were kids and so self-involved.
Egomaniacs. Yeah. And didn't realize how great you were.
We've talked about it. I think you just assumed everybody was as good as them.
And then you get into
as you grow up and you work with other actors, you realize how lucky we were to have you guys.
This has been brought to you by the fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5. New episode out now. You can listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Who's there for heroes or the families left behind when a service member or first responder dies or is severely injured in the line of duty? Who helps our country's homeless veterans and who helps our nation to never forget 9/11? Let me tell you who. The Tunnel to Towers Foundation.
The foundation's Gold Star, Fallen First Responder, Smart Home, and Homeless Veteran programs comprise their In the Line of Duty programs. They're all dedicated to honoring our nation's heroes and their families.
The Foundation's Never Forget programs engage people in 9/11 remembrance across America in so many ways. Over 80 runs, walks, and climbs a year, dozens of golf outings, and the Tunnel to Towers 9/11 Institutes, educating kids in K-12 grades to help our nation keep its vow to never forget.
More than 95 cents of every dollar you donate to Tunnel to Towers goes to its programs. Never forget the sacrifices of our country's greatest heroes. Donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at T2T.org. That's T2T.org.
You're listening to 24, the Year of Impact, with Clay and Buck.
We are looking at some interesting stuff happening in New York these days. That's probably always true, but in the political sense, particularly interesting stuff happening right now. I'm just going to put this to you so we can dive into it. Back in 2008, Barack Obama won New York that year by a 26.9% margin of victory. Okay. So almost, we'll call it 27 points, which is, you know, that is a beatdown for sure. I'm looking right now, Mark, at the latest Siena College polling, which was just from a week ago, and the polls all compiled here on 538.com. They've got in New York, Trump v. Biden, Biden up 7 points, Biden up 8 points. You think something big is perhaps in the mix. What's going on here? Is this going to be competitive?
Oh, no, I think Donald Trump's going to win New York. I don't think it's going to be competitive. I think he'll win it. You got to remember about 2008, McCain was, for whatever reason, he wasn't a strong candidate. Turnout for him was extremely low, so that's not the best test. Now, remember, Ronald Reagan won New York twice, so it can be done. I know that's a long time ago, but Trump is different from anybody else. He's beloved in New York by a lot of people. I know New York City's the problem, but half the voters are outside of New York City. He's got them. And normally he'd have trouble in New York City, but a lot of that Democratic base is secretly, quietly moving over to Trump. People that just don't like the crime anymore. They don't like it out of control. He goes to Harlem, where that bodega is, or as Biden would say, that bogota. And he appears at that bodega. And watch the video. Everybody in the street is cheering him. There's no booze anywhere. He goes to the construction site on Park Avenue. But remember, it's working class guys, construction workers who live in New York, and they're all cheering him and chanting for him. I think he wins. I think he wins New York.
All right. I want to dive into this because this is a bold prediction. I love bold predictions, as Buck well knows, although I've lost on several of my bold predictions here. I want to hit you with a couple of fact patterns. Close race just happened, to be fair. 2022 governor's race. Kathy Hochul, not very popular. Lee Zeldin loses 53-47. So let me ask you this question. If Kathy Hochul and Lee Zeldin ran in 2024, in other words, if we didn't have a midterm 2022 election, if they were on the ballot, I presume you think Lee Zeldin would win head-to-head against Kathy Hochul as well, and that there's been a further shift rightward since he would have lost by 6 points 2 years ago.
Yeah, I love Lee Zeldin. Great guy. He'd be an excellent governor. He's not exactly the most dynamic candidate in the world. And Hochul had all that Democratic momentum behind her. But people have now seen her in office for a few years, and she stinks. She's absolutely awful. Between the congestion pricing, doing nothing about this anti-Semitism all over the campuses, doing nothing about inflation in the state. Congestion pricing is ridiculous. She sends the National Guard into the subway to protect people. There's crime down there. They have no power in the subway to do anything. So she decides they'll inspect packages or bags. I don't know any criminal that brings luggage with them. They don't have briefcases. They don't have purses. I don't know what they're inspecting. So, yeah, Zeldin could win today. And I really think Trump, you said he was 7-8 points behind. That was the case in almost every swing state, and he closed those gaps. He's good at closing 8% gaps. He'll do it in New York.
Okay, so if he wins New York, this is going to be a landslide. Do you agree with that? I mean, because he's not going to lose Pennsylvania and win New York, right? He's not going to lose Wisconsin and win New York. He's not going to win New York and lose Michigan. I mean, that would mean that he would sweep through the Midwest. He might win Minnesota. What you're saying is 6 months out, you think Trump is not only going to win, he's going to win comfortably. By 10 o'clock Eastern on election night, we would know that he was the winner.
Well, yeah, I mean, who knows what the Democrats will pull, but it's only going to get better for Donald Trump, and it's only going to get worse for Joe Biden. Mentally, things will come out. I think these trials have had just the opposite effect Democrats intended. People are starting to look at these trials. I don't mean the MSNBC crowd. I mean normal people, and they don't like the total perversion of our justice system. They don't like any of this. It's only going to get better for Trump. In the summer, you'll see momentum just accelerate.
Do you think Biden's going to debate, Mark? I'm sure you saw today he said on another radio show, oh, yeah, I'll debate Trump. Trump's response to it was, no one really believes that, right? What do you think?
I don't believe it. I mean, what was his exact words? I'd be happy to. He's not saying I'll do it. I'd be happy to. But the staff, whoever, will come up with a million excuses not to do it. Hey, you notice Biden won't talk to the New York Times, won't give them an interview, won't give any real news organization an interview, but he's happy to do Seth Meyers and Howard Stern. What does that tell you about his confidence?
Yeah, no, there's clearly a coddling of him in the media that goes beyond even what we normally would expect. We're speaking to Mark Simone, Mr. New York of 710 WOR in NYC. So you mentioned the trials, Mark, and Clay and I have tried to do a little bit of jury pool analysis, but also looking back, or, you know, taking a step back and looking at the overall system in New York City. Do you have any faith that there might be somebody on that jury who's just going to say, this is too crazy, I can't go along with this? Or do you think that it's kind of a done deal and they might get a guilty verdict on this?
I don't have a lot of confidence. It's a New York jury. It's a totally over-the-top biased judge. The only good news is the Harvey Weinstein reversal was based on all these things the judge did, and this judge in the Trump trial has done exactly the same thing. So that almost guarantees the reversal. Hopefully the judge is looking at this and will ease up a little. But there's no crime alleged. The catch and kill, perfectly legal. Biden did the biggest catch and kill in history when he had Facebook, Twitter, the biggest publishers, cover up the Hunter laptop scandal. So, but you're right. You can never tell what a jury will do.
You mentioned that, again, you think Trump's gonna win New York, which would be amazing and would be a lot of fun to watch. Because can you imagine the panic that would ensue at MSNBC and CNN? Because New York comes in early. And if you start seeing those numbers and Biden is only up a couple of points or Trump is within a couple of points, what does the tally look like? You had 47%, if I'm looking at this overall, in terms of turnout in 2022. Do you think there's going to be a massive turnout in the New York election? Or do you think Biden's just not getting out his base? Black voters are moving on, Asian, Hispanic voters. What does the coalition look like for Trump if that were to happen?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. But I think low turnout for Biden, and you don't usually get the high Republican turnout in New York, but you'll get it this time because, again, crime is a huge factor. Also, this anti-Semitism, the stuff on the college campus, it's frightening a lot of people, not just Jews, but Christians, Gentiles as well, because this kind of bigotry being tolerated is frightening to a lot of people. And just watch the perversion of the justice system, the total disintegration of our universities, the streets, everything is just awful, the migrants everywhere. I think you're going to see enormous Republican turnout this time. Also, look at Long Island, Nassau County, which is a good barometer. The county executive, the attorney general, the Republicans swept in Nassau County. It's a good indicator of what's coming.
Mark Simone, everybody. Mark, appreciate you being with us. Thanks for calling in from 710 WOR. Great to have you, as always.
Thanks. Love listening to you every day.
Thanks, man. Thanks so much. You know, Clay, I just want to say, you know, you said it. You're a bold prediction guy, but Trump, if Trump wins New York, this is up there with, you remember when some of you do remember this, Ann Coulter was on Bill Maher's show at the very beginning of the 2016 cycle primary. And they said, who do you think's going to win? And she said, right on camera, she stared right in the camera. This is before, like, the polls showed him ahead. She said, Donald Trump. And they had to have her on later. That was a heck, whatever you think, that was a heck of a call. If Mark is right and Trump wins New York, the first time a Republican will have won it since Ronald Reagan, we're going to have him on for a little victory dance. I think Trump will, you know, it's funny. He's so ready to go that Trump will win that me pointing out that he's only behind, even by Democrat pollsters, 6-7 points. I mean, that's a contested state if you really look at it, right? 6 or 7 points looks like that's up for grabs. So it's not as crazy. That's why I said Barack Obama won by almost 30. Very different times now.
Yeah, and I think this is a good question because you guys out there listening can help us with this. Is that the boldest prediction in 3 years of us being on the air in terms of guess? I know you and I have made bold predictions, but I don't even think I've gone that far in making a bold prediction about New York because it's not just if he's right. Think yeah. about it. I've made some bold predictions, many of them wrong. But if you think about it, if New York flips, that's why I asked him. I mean, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin are going to go Trump. And then I think Minnesota probably would. And I think you would flip Virginia potentially. Like you're talking about New York a landslide Trump, it's a, style.
It's a total butt kicking. There's no question about it because you're not going to win New York and not win Pennsylvania. You're not going to win New York and then fail to win Pennsylvania and some of these other key states. But I think that, look, I mean, you talk about predictions. I thought Lee Zeldin was going to win and maybe that for governor. And that would have been at least one repudiation of a COVID lockdown lunatic governor. Yeah. Unfortunately, it didn't end up happening, but he made it close. And, you know, New York right after California is the biggest Democrat stronghold state that there is. So the fact that it would even be a place where you're going to see Republican members of Congress that are doing well in New York, we would not have the very thin. And some of that is self-inflicted wounds by the Republicans in Congress, unfortunately. But we would not have a Republican majority if it were not for New York Republicans and California Republicans coming out and winning in some key congressional races and the GOP base turning out for them there.
Particularly in New York, Long Island, Nassau, and Suffolk counties. I mean, turning out big for Republicans. I do think that's big Trump territory. We talked about this last year when I was up in Cooperstown, how blown away my kids were. Trump flags everywhere. Everywhere we went in upstate New York, when we were in Cooperstown, New York, my kids couldn't get over it. We were driving around. I mean, that is major Trump territory. And what Mark Simone just hit on is it's really you win in Manhattan. I remember we had Lee Zeldin on, and you win in Manhattan by limiting the amount that Democrats can run up the score. And I do think that Manhattan and in the New York City area, I don't think that Biden's going to run up the score. I think, again, it comes down to these suburban moms, these suburban women, and maybe they're not threatened in New York over the abortion argument because it's easier to get an abortion now, I think, in New York than it was before Roe v. Wade was overturned.
Well, this is why I think, you know, we had that caller before and he said he's so worried about how abortion's going to play into this. It worked really well in 2022 because they were able to lie to people and say, in all kinds of states, they're going to stop you from getting abortions in places like New York. And I think this is a tragedy, but in places like New York, it's still just as easy to get an abortion. And so it's a lot harder, I think, to drive turnout because that is the law. People can understand it there. We'll take some of your calls. I'm wondering if anybody else, let's see if anybody else, Clay, in New York wants to back Mark up on this one. Among the boldest, for sure, predictions we have heard on this show, and you know, Mark is very tied into the political scene in New York City and up in Albany for New York State. So, you know, I talked to him a little bit before. I said, "Are you sure? Do you want to say
you want to say that publicly on the air?"
I was like, "You really want to let it rip?" He said, "He is confident. He is fired up, and he says he sees it."
Born on America's darkest day of 9/11, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation has been helping America's heroes ever since. When a first responder or military service member doesn't come home and young children are left behind, Tunnel to Towers pays the mortgage on the family home to lift the financial burden.
For severely injured veterans and first responders, Tunnel to Towers builds mortgage-free smart homes, enabling severely injured heroes to move around their homes more independently. Through the foundation's homeless veteran program, Tunnel to Towers is providing housing and services to homeless veterans. More than 3,300 were helped last year alone. Because all veterans who honorably served, whether in peacetime or war, deserve our nation's gratitude.
People who put their lives on the line for our country and our communities need your help now more than ever. Join Tunnel to Towers on its mission to do good and never forget 9/11 or the sacrifices of this country's heroes. Donate $11 a month at T2T.org. That's T, the number 2T.org.
Tired of restless nights? At Leesa, we know good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. From memory foam mattresses to hybrids that keep you cool all night long, Leesa's mattresses offer exceptional comfort and support with free delivery and 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus two free pillows. Go to leesa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. Exclusions apply. See leesa.com for more details.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.